I want to talk to you tonight about a subject that I think is very pertinent and applicable to people, particularly members of the church, as they strive to be what they should be in the community. I want to talk about the Christian at work, discuss some of the things that Christians face in the workplace, how those things should be handled, and how we should conduct ourselves as we work for others and with others in the community. In Ephesians, the sixth chapter, I want to read a couple of texts for us before we begin. In Ephesians, the sixth chapter, beginning in verse 5 and reading through verse 8. And then there'll be a companion passage in Colossians 3, which is almost virtually the same message that Paul gives to the Ephesians here. He says, "Servants, be obedient unto them that according to the flesh are your masters, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ, not in the way of eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that whatsoever good thing each one doeth, the same shall he receive again from the Lord, whether he be bond or free." Now, the bond or free in these passages refers to slave or non-slave, if you will. We don't have possibly the exact same employment setup in our day and age. We don't have slavery. But we are employed by others, and we bear the same responsibility of loyalty and devotion to the workplace as they did. Now in Colossians 3:22, beginning and reading through verse 24, Paul again to a different group of people says, "Servants, obey in all things them that are your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatsoever you do, work heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that from the Lord ye shall receive the recompense of the inheritance, ye serve the Lord Christ." Now these verses make rather clear some things to us, and it is our hope in our lesson this evening we'll develop a clear understanding of first the meaning of the verses, but not only the meaning of the verses, but the clear authority behind them. And by when I say the authority behind them, I mean that we will understand that they are commandments that are given to us, that they are obligations that are placed upon us as Christians, something we are to do as we go about our daily lives in the community. Some of the things I want to notice, first of all, just in breaking down the verses, is one of the first things he says is that he wants them to serve in fear and trembling. I'm not sure if you remember this passage or not, but there's a passage over in Philippians, the second chapter, verse 12, that says, "So then, my beloved, even as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." The exact same words are rendered fear and trembling in that verse as are rendered fear and trembling in our verse in Ephesians. And so, when he says fear and trembling, if you look up the definition of these words, fear and trembling, I think the word for fear is phobos and the word for trembling is trombos. I'm not positive of that one. But at least there are words that mean very similar, have very similar meanings. And so when you look up the description of this phrase as it's combined, this fear and trembling, it really comes out something like this, a trembling or quaking with fear. Now, this word phobos can mean fear all the way from being terrified with fear to that of simply being reverent before someone who is worthy of honor. But it says a trembling or quaking with fear and trembling used to describe the anxiety of one who distrusts his ability to completely meet all the requirements, but religiously does his utmost to fulfill his duty. So we're talking a person, when he says, I want you to do this with fear and trembling, he's recognizing the fact that a man is going to undertake a task of great responsibility, because we'll, as we'll discuss later, he's doing this unto the Lord. So he has this great responsibility and is one that causes him to be fearful and to tremble. That is, to wonder, can I really accomplish this by myself? And of course, the answer to that is probably no. And so one needs to then, in a state of fear and trembling, when we work out our salvation with fear and trembling, when we conduct ourselves in the workplace to meet our responsibilities to our employers with fear and trembling, it simply means that we do so with some trepidation about our ability to accomplish that. Therefore, we rely more on the Lord, and we trust in God, and we pray to God, and we're dependent upon Him to give us and provide us strength, which He provides through normal channels of our study of His Word and our communication with Him through prayer. The next thing he says is in singleness of heart, or in conjunction with that fear and trembling, he follows it up with in singleness of heart, which simply means to be sober in our approach toward this, to be serious, to have sincere devotion to the effort demanded. That is, to have our focus intently pointed toward the task we're undertaking. You'll recall the passages that talk about a double-minded man in James, the first chapter. And a double-minded man is the opposite of one who has singleness of heart, because he has two things he's trying to please. He's trying to please this, he's trying to please that. And what this is suggesting is that we know, we understand because of our fear and trembling, the great responsibility we have, and therefore we have a singleness, a focus on that one power or authority that can assist us, that is God. And so our singleness of heart means that we soberly approach this and seriously focus on what we need to do to achieve our goal. Then he goes on and points out, not in the way of eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, the good will doing service as unto the Lord and not unto men. This is almost a repeated concept where he says, don't be men pleasers, in other words, or don't do it to look good in the eyes of men, but do it from your heart to please God, see, doing the will of God from the heart. And then he repeats that, actually, by saying, with good will doing service as unto the Lord and not unto men. So he's trying to make the point emphatically that our role as employees is to serve God. It's almost like street language interpretation would be shooting for the stars. You shoot for the stars. You please God, and you cannot fail to please your employer, unless your employer is a crook of some kind and expects you to do things that are dishonest and not appropriate, which we're not wanting to please employers like that anyway. As soon as we find that out, we're probably looking somewhere else apply our trade. But we are to do our service as unto God and not man. The difficulty there, or the awareness that we should have with the application of this passage, is that when we do our service unto God, we have someone who is approving our work, who is unbiased, who holds a high standard, a non-negotiable standard, that we can clearly understand. But when we try to please men, we begin to deal with sometimes people with duplicitous motives and various things. And so sometimes it can be difficult to please a man, and sometimes it doesn't require a good effort to please a man. It requires a dishonest effort, as we'll talk about a little later here. So the idea is then, you reach for the gold standard. That is, you try to please God. And when you go to work each day, you recognize you're going to work to serve God. Now, the third concept that is expressed in here is that God will repay you according to what you do. Now, in Ephesians, and I want to read both texts on this so that I think we can get a clearer understanding of it. In Ephesians, it says, verse 8, knowing that whatsoever good thing each one doeth, the same shall he receive again from the Lord, whether he be bond or free, slave or master, or just free. In Colossians, when he gets to that point, he says, knowing that from the Lord ye shall receive the recompense of the inheritance, ye serve the Lord Christ. Now, I just want to issue a kind of a little caveat or maybe even a warning that we not fall into the trap of reading Ephesians 6:8 and saying, well, the Lord says that through the Apostle Paul, that whatever I do, I'm going to receive back in kind. Now, you and I both know that you can do some good things and have people just treat you horribly for it. We have a kind of a joking expression we use sometimes among friends. No good deed goes un... how is it un... yeah, whatever. The senility comes and goes. But nevertheless, it's something we say kind of jokingly, but it really expresses a rather accurate depiction of the ingratitude that people sometimes show toward things that people do. So we want to dispense with the idea that some people have proposed over the years that there is a kind of a gospel of prosperity, if you will, that those who serve the Lord faithfully will just be blessed abundantly. Well, the fact of the matter is, as Jesus says, God sends His rain on the just and on the unjust. And there are some just people that will be blessed abundantly, and there are some unjust people that will be blessed abundantly, and vice versa. And so don't count on material blessing or material earthly benefit of the things that you do. But rather, as Colossians says, look upon it as what the writer Paul says there, that he's going to repay you with your inheritance. Now we can go to Romans 8 and other passages, 1 Corinthians 15, all those passages, we can begin to find out the quality of the inheritance that awaits the faithful Christian. And when we do that, we then understand what Paul is really saying here very subtly is that if you serve God in the workplace, if you do your work as if you're working for God, and your integrity is high, and your loyalty is all it should be, and you give of yourself as you should to the employer as you work for him, you're going to receive an inheritance that is far greater from God than the reward you'll ever receive from this employee or employer. So it not only advises us how we should live, it that a servant should do these various things, and how he should serve, shouldn't be a slacker and all those kinds of things if he expects to please God, but that God will reward him. The reward that we receive from God is far greater than we receive from any other source. And then the converse is true. If you choose to please man or to please self, either one at work, rather than pleasing God, at the expense of pleasing God, let me say it that way. If you please yourself or your employer at the expense of pleasing God, going against what God would have you to do, then you're going to be going against receiving the inheritance that God has provided for you, and you're going to be settling for the inheritance or the pittance that can be paid by the employer. I want to talk to you briefly about temptations that employees face in the workplace. I'm going to talk graphically about these things. I do not want to embarrass anyone. I don't want to cause anyone to to think about things that other than things that would serve as warnings and advice for them. But in 2 Timothy, the second chapter, in verse 22, the Apostle Paul tells the young preacher, but flee youthful lusts. Now, Paul considers himself to be Timothy's father in spirit, in a sense, in that he converted him, those things. He then says to him, I want you to flee youthful lusts. He implies there are things that are going to be tempting to you, Timothy, that would not be tempting to an older man. But to you, because of your youth, you're going to face some temptations that others do not face. You flee those youthful lusts, and here's the way you do it. You follow after righteousness, faith, love, peace, with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. You maintain a pure heart before God. When you rise in the morning and when you go to bed at night, you are committed to righteousness, faith, love, and peace. And that is the mantra, if you will, of your life. And if you can sustain that, then you're going to find it very reasonable for you to flee these youthful lusts, because you're actually leaving behind those things and going towards something more noble. And that noble lifestyle is what you're striving to achieve. Need to maintain a pure heart before God. Sexual activity among employees of any company is kind of the greatest fad of the day. Now, I know that the things I remember are prehistoric and of that nature, but I want you to understand that it wasn't too many years ago that, in fact, I actually worked at a place when the change went from the fact that you were not allowed to date a fellow employee to the time that you could. I saw a young couple get married that worked for the same company. It was a wholesome situation, and there wasn't anything unwholesome that I know about it. But nevertheless, prior to that couple, the company that we worked for would not allow someone to even go on a date with someone else that worked for the same company. Now, that tells you that this wasn't an organization run by elders of the church. This wasn't an organization run by Christians at all. It was an organization run by men who knew good business. And they simply said, we're not going to have people playing smiley face and ogling each other on the job. We're going to have people that are doing their work while they're there. And if you find two people that seem to be more in love with themselves than they are with their jobs, you got to pick one of them and get rid of them. Somebody has to go. And you feel sorry for it, but the person with the lower position in the company always had to go because the other person was considered to be more valuable to the company. Well, I'm simply saying to you that when you spend 8 to 10 hours a day with people at the place where you work, you leave home at 7 o'clock, and I'm probably being gracious with some of you, because I walk my dog at 6 and I see a lot of people going to work then, I'll just tell you. So people even leave the house earlier than that. But nevertheless, if you leave your house at 7 o'clock and you get off work at 5 o'clock and you're home by 6 o'clock, you have spent, 11 hours away from home? Something like that out of the 24-hour day. You're going to spend 8 of those remaining hours in bed sleeping, probably, or thereabouts. You have 5 hours to spend with your family, your spouse, and so forth, that compared to the hours you're spending at work. There's a natural tendency for greater familiarity when you're working alongside people. And you cannot develop respect in this matter for your fellow employees. You can't consult someone you work with about things of this nature because they don't follow the same standards that you do. Therefore, you need to consult the Apostle Paul about your standards and set them accordingly. A couple of questions that a professional in this particular field said one should pose to himself. And then there are some other questions to follow this as well. But said, do I dress or conduct myself at my place of employment to please someone there, specifically someone of the opposite sex that works there? Do you subconsciously, when you get up in the morning, do you subconsciously think of what old Bill or Bob will think of what you look like, or Susie or Ann will think of what you look like or what you're dressed like and what their tastes are and adapt your tastes? Do you consider those things? Do you consider them overtly, or do you consider them subconsciously? If you do, that's a warning sign that tells you something is already starting to slip out of place. Do you hope to have someone particularly either ask you to go to lunch or agree to go to lunch with you if you ask at your workplace? These are things that should not be. They sound innocent enough, but they're the first steps and first danger signs. Here's a list of 7 suggestions from a professional who said, I failed. I know these things are important because my life was nearly ruined and wrecked by an affair at my employment because I didn't follow these rules. Rule number 1, people of the opposite sex should not ride in a car together without a third party present in your employment. Sometimes people who work jobs are sent out on assignments together. It's a dangerous thing when you consistently are assigned to tasks with a person of the opposite sex and you end up traveling together to those assignments. Don't make personal, non-work-related phone calls to a coworker of the opposite sex. Don't call your fellow employees of the opposite sex socially away from work. Don't have lunch with the same person of the opposite sex every day. The explanation of this was that some workplaces, people eat their lunch in a lunchroom. And a handful of people may be in there eating at the same time, and then it's easy to gravitate toward. You begin to have lunch with this same person every day because you're in there at the same time and you both are eating your lunch. So you sit down together and you eat this lunch every day, the same 2 people. It will create even more of an affinity for one another when you begin to share time together in those ways. Make sure your emails and all communications are not suggestive or flirtatious at all. And if someone begins to flirt with you, recognize it. Stop it right there. Very, very important, this next one. Any discussions that you have of your spouse at work, you make sure that you speak positively about your spouse, and you make sure that people know you love that person and you're happily married to them with no contemplation of any future changes in that relationship. You avoid the lingering eye contact from someone who becomes very obvious. That kind of thing is almost adolescent, but still it takes place in the adult world. The only appropriate touch between 2 employees of the opposite sex that are unmarried is a handshake. Now, this was a lady who wrote these 7 things who said her life was nearly ruined because a situation got out of hand before she recognized the warning signs, but she was able to reclaim her life with her husband, but she admitted she suffered years of anguish before their relationship was properly restored. And this was not a Christian woman. This is a professional woman who's just telling you what happens in the workplace. Remember Potiphar's wife. I was in here Wednesday night with y'all at your class. I had to put Potiphar's wife in there because think about the situation that Joseph was thrust into, where he was forced to have this daily contact. He was in and out of the house and so forth, as she was. The scripture doesn't give us a lot of details. We don't know how long she tried to work on Joseph. We don't know how long that situation went on, where he, how many times he had to refuse her and so forth, until finally he had to do it almost in a violent way to tell her. He had to flee, literally flee, for his purity. And so just remember that people, once they have decided to go down this route, down this road, if you are the object of their affection, they won't go away easily. The second thing we should remember, apart from the sexual temptations, is, and I'll mention this briefly because I think it's such an obvious one, that in the workplace, you are placed in an obvious situation that teaches you to learn to love the world and the things of the world. Because in the workplace, how many times are you given incentive to work harder, to work more hours, to do extra study or extra preparation for higher positions so that you can make more money, so that you can have a higher position, more authority, and more income. And then you can, in turn, acquire things in this world that are most pleasant. Along these lines, remember Demas. Paul said about Demas, "He hath forsaken me, for he loved this present world." He simply was more devoted to the things the world could do for him than he was for what he could do for the Lord by assisting the Apostle Paul. Then I want to talk to you finally about an area that I think behooves Christians to really rise above. And that is in the area of dishonesty. Hardly a time goes by when we're not reading about somebody who's embezzling money from a company, who's doing something. Now that's a combination, of course, of greed and lust for this world's goods that we just talked about, and a dishonest heart. But still, there are many things that take place that are dishonest in the workplace. And some of the things that people do regularly need to be called to our attention. One thing is that people actually sometimes cheat the customer in order to please the boss. Now, I won't get into the legal ramifications of that, but by the way, don't ever do that. Let me just tell you, I don't know about any other business, but in the financial world, if you cheat the customer to please your boss, you'll be wearing these funny-looking little bracelets, because it's not a simple little thing. It's not just that you cheated somebody like at work. It's called fraud, and it's called theft by deception and all of those kinds of things. So don't do that. But nevertheless, people are tempted. Think about it. If you can make your boss more profit than he's making today, that's your first motivation, is to make the business better for him than it was yesterday. Be careful how far you go along those lines. Because when you begin to try to achieve an honorable end with a dishonorable effort, then you have begun to fail to meet the standards that the apostle has set for us. Then there's the person who tries to cheat the boss. He's the lazy person, kind of slothful, as the psalmist says. And he will cheat the boss any way he can out of interest for himself. Now, it may be just pure laziness that he doesn't like to work, and therefore he's going to try to get by with as little work as he can. It may be any one of a number of ways that he does this, but cheating the boss is no more in harmony with biblical teaching than cheating the customer. And then, of course, cheating the company or the boss for personal profit, so that somewhere or another we are, in essence, in some way embezzling funds or taking profit out of the company that we're not entitled to. Four questions about your honesty at work that you should be able to answer, that you must be able to answer. Do you lie to your employer for any reason, large or small? I know you say, oh, no, I don't lie. I'm not a liar. But just think about that for a minute. Don't answer that too fast, because it doesn't take much to lie to your employer. It doesn't take much to lie to someone else. There is a standard. And do you represent yourself as meeting the standard of the normal employee who sloughs off and doesn't always do his job the way he should? Or do you represent yourself as meeting the standard that the company has set? Because that's what God is telling us we have to do. God says if you'll serve God, then you'll do exactly what the employer is asking you to do, as long as it's appropriate. And so if we misrepresent our efforts to our employer, that we're not doing what he's asked us to do, but we're claiming we have, then that's a lie to your employer. Do you waste company time? And this is something that us old fogies never had to deal with much, but today you do in the workplace. Do you waste company time on the internet, using it for your personal purposes? I've heard people talk about this a little bit. We had an old arcade computer system in the 70s and 80s, and it had no ability to get on the internet. All it did was do company functions is all it did. It was a computer, but it wasn't. You couldn't Google on that one. Couldn't get on the internet. But people can today. You have that ability. And people, not only, even if the boss shuts down your access to the internet, what's the little advertisement with the little baby? When they take away all of his stuff, finally he says, oh, just a man, his iPad or his cell phone or something, and he starts making these business trades on that. So you have your own equipment you can use if the boss denies you use of his. But the point is not that so much as, are you using his time for your personal entertainment or whatever? Do you leave work easily, or early rather, if your boss will not find out? Boss leaves early. He doesn't know what's going on now. So do you then leave early yourself because you know you won't get caught? That's dishonesty. That's not integrity. And I'm not suggesting that no one has ever done that. I'm suggesting no one should ever do that. That's what we're all here to learn tonight, is what we should do. Do you complete your work as fast as possible or linger to avoid more assignments? Now, you've worked around some malingerers. I know you have if you've worked very long. You've worked around some people that do that kind of thing. It's really irritating. I mean, here you're over here just busting at trying to get your job done. And as soon as you get your job done, then you get another assignment. And the next thing you know, you've done three jobs, and this guy's still over here fiddling around with the first one he had. And you're saying to yourself, you know, something's just not right here. Something's wrong with this picture. But what are you remembering in that case? You're going to remember the inheritance, aren't you? You have an inheritance coming he doesn't have. And he's working for the paycheck. See, you've quit working now for the paycheck. You're now working for God. And so you're working for the inheritance. And that eliminates your ability or your willingness to do these things. So what would you say? We remembered Potiphar's wife. We remembered Demas. Let's remember Judas. Let's remember Judas and his covetous nature and how he stole from the bag and all the things he did because he was selfish. And these things come out of selfishness. That's what they come out of. We're trying to make things better for us at someone else's expense. Well, the question is, how do we measure up with the instructions of Paul in our text this evening. And the real question is, and the real lesson we need to learn, is that we really do need to learn and understand that when we go to work in the morning, we're representing God. We're representing Christ and all the principles He taught. We're representing God and the standard that He sets. And therefore, we go to work and we go to work to please God. Yes, there will be times when we'll be abused at work. We'll be overworked at somebody while somebody else is underworked. And all of those things will take place. But we need to recognize we go to work to please God. And all of these things we've talked about, whether it be the sexual temptation or the dishonesty or the temptation to love the world, to become greedy and to sell yourself for the company store or to the company store, all of those things are displeasing to God. They violate the principle that Paul taught about the Christian at work. Now, I want to mention one final point, then we'll close the lesson. And that is the reason, I suppose, that we don't want to be covetous like Judas, who we talked about last week. The reason we want to be the kind of employee that the Apostle Paul talks about here is certainly because we want to go to heaven when we die. There's no question there. But while we are here, we are charged with a responsibility to be a disciple of Jesus. And we want to be His disciple. We don't just want to be somebody that goes to church with some of His disciples. We want to be His disciple. So we want to be, as His disciple, a good example to the world. Now, wherever you work, if there are very many people there, there's quite possibly someone there who could be very positively influenced by an honest employee. People who meet the standards we talked about tonight are rare. Unless the workforce has changed in the last, I hate to admit it, but 30 years. Anyway, unless it's changed in those last 20 to 30 years, and I don't think human nature's changed that much, then the person who meets Paul's standard is a rare bird indeed. And people appreciate that. I can tell you from personal experience and from observing other people as well, that people really, really stand in awe of that. And those who do are obviously quite possibly people who would listen to the message of the Lord because they see what's done in your life. So as a representative of Christ, as a disciple of Christ, you have an opportunity to have a positive influence on the life of others and to bring the lost to Christ by being the kind of person that you should be in the workplace each and every day. There may be those here this evening who need to be restored to the Lord, who need to obey the gospel. Whatever your situation may be, I do not know. You know. You know whether sin has separated you from God. You know whether your life is in need of the prayers of the brethren. You know whether your life is in need of repentance and baptism for the remission of your sins. And I submit to you that because you know, the responsibility then fully becomes yours to do something about that. We encourage you to do that as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.